It's time for the number one talk show of Eastern Connecticut and Southern Rhode Island. The Stu Breyer Potpourri Talk Show on 1310 WICH. Now here's Stu Breyer.
Here's my pal Rob Simmons with you, the Colonel on WICH. Always a pleasure to have him on our program and get his insights on what is going on in the country right now. Hello, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Stu, and it's a beautiful day in southeastern Connecticut, nice and sunny. The grass is green, the flowers are beginning to burst out, and cherry trees are looking great.
You're so positive. I aim to burst your bubble with some questions.
It's all so positive, and then I pick up the newspaper and read about what's going on at Columbia University in New York City and at Yale and New Haven and Harvard and Boston and Stanford and California. I'm thinking, geez, what's going on? So, what's happening here?
Rob, before you get on, and I want your take on all of this, I got to tell you what I saw last night. I saw a student who was one of the few that actually let herself be interviewed. And one of the first things she said, you know, that attack never happened in Israel. That's, you know, everybody's been telling me that. And it's just, so the interviewer, of course, tried to set her straight. But that's the kind of mentality we're seeing. But there's more to it. Give me your take on it.
Well, it's funny because I was also watching TV about some of it this week. And one of the interviewers went up to a student in New York who was chanting from the river to the sea, someday Palestine will be free. Mm-hmm. And the interviewer said, tell me about that chant and that slogan. What's the river? And she said, well, you know, over there, there's a river. He said, well, what's it called? Well, I'm not sure, but, you know, it's a river. And he said, well, okay, well, how about the sea? What is the sea? she didn't know.
Yeah.
Now,
it's amazing, huh?
You know, for the record, the river is the Jordan River.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jordan River is deep and wide. Hallelujah.
Oh,
I've actually been to the Jordan River. I crossed the Jordan River on the Allenby Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you this, it's not deep and it's not wide. it's actually a pretty narrow little river that creates a portion of the eastern border of Israel. And the sea, of course, is the Mediterranean Sea. And so to chant from the river to the sea, someday Palestine will be free,
mm-hmm.
Is to say that Israel will be eliminated.
They're just followers. They're just followers.
The Jews will either be killed or driven out of the Holy Land, which Jews have occupied since 2500 B.C. People seem to forget, but, you know, the fight between David and Goliath. David was the guy that took on the Philistine giant and beat him and became the king. David was Jewish. He was a Jew. That took place hundreds of years before the birth of Christ. And Goliath was a Philistine. He was not a Palestinian. The Philistines occupied that portion of territory, which is now considered Palestine, or occupied, you know, that territory that now has the Gaza Strip in it. And they were a Greek merchant ship owners who had crossed the Mediterranean and settled there for purposes of trade. So the Jews have been there for a long time. And sadly, with the diaspora, with the discrimination that has occurred against Jews, especially by Muslims, not all Muslims, but by Muslims generally speaking, also mm-hmm. by Christians during the Middle Ages, the Jews have wandered elsewhere around the world. And it all came to a head with World War II and the Nazis and the Holocaust, that the conscience of the world finally settled on creating a Jewish homeland in Israel, which used to be Judea, used to be King David's territory many hundreds of years before Christ. So I don't understand why American college students have joined up with Hamas, which is a listed terrorist organization, listed in the Clinton administration as a terrorist organization, listed by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization, and then listed in an executive order during the Bush administration as a terrorist organization. I don't understand why these college kids are joining up with Hamas and chanting anti-Semitic chants.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this,
Rob. Eliminating Israel. Where did that come from?
Well, there's one word that, in one of the words, is clueless. But when you give somebody that argument or that conversation with them, they'll say, "Well, yeah, but Israel should not be killing all of these innocent people who had nothing to do with it." That's one of their arguments.
Well, let me ask you this question, Stu. When we dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, did we kill innocent people?
Absolutely, yeah. I mentioned that, too, on the show, yeah.
Well, when we firebombed Dresden and other cities in Germany, did we kill innocent people?
That's why we say war is hell.
War is not a good way to solve problems. And for these students to take the position of Hamas and to say, you know, "I'm with Hamas," and not understand what the implications of that might be is sad. But, you know, I don't blame the students. I blame the faculty, and I blame the administration. The faculty of these universities has become so left of center, so intolerant of public debate, intolerant of any point of view except their own, that this is a serious problem for us living here in the United States. And those of us who are fortunate enough to live in southeastern Connecticut and say, "Well, you know, it doesn't really impact on me." Well, it does. Well, it does. I taught at Yale for 10 years. A lot of great kids there. But it was definitely not friendly to conservatives. I studied at Harvard on two different occasions, got a degree, a graduate degree from Harvard. But it was definitely not conservative. And when I worked on my PhD at UConn for 4 years, I did not get the support of the faculty to pursue my degree because I was too conservative. So then you look at the numbers, and they've done surveys. The Harvard Crimson Survey in 2022 said that 45% of the faculty identified as very liberal, 37% as liberal, 16% as moderate, and 1.4% as conservative.
Yeah, something doesn't balance with that, does it?
This does not balance out. And a 2017 survey of 7,243 tenured faculty at 40 top schools found a total of 314 Republicans, outnumbered 11.5-1 by registered Democrats, and I don't have the numbers on the unaffiliated.
Well, one of the scary things here, well, of course, a lot of these college students are gullible and don't even know who Lincoln is, but is the faculty and the presidents of these colleges have proven to be anti-Semitic. Subsequently, they're soft on these young people, and that's really scary. You figure, well, these young people need to learn something, but they're not getting it from college.
Well, that's exactly right. And an editorial in the New York Post yesterday referred to Monday night in New York City when the New York Police Department moved in on the New York University, New York University pro-Hamas occupiers. That's not at Columbia, but it's in New York. Monday night, it's a state university. Professors formed a human chain to block the cops.
Yep. There you go.
Professors formed a human chain to block the cops, which reveals, in a nutshell, what the problem is. It's the faculty, and it's the administration. The president of Columbia University was called before a congressional committee last week, last Thursday, April 17th, I believe, and she was asked if the slogan "From the River to the Sea," calling for the destruction of Israel, was anti-Semitic. And you know what her answer was?
I can imagine. What was her answer?
Her answer was that she would, quote, prefer not to hear it. She would prefer not to hear it.
That's the little dance they do.
But she isn't going to do anything about it because she respects freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. Freedom of speech.
Freedom of hate, freedom to want to kill people.
Now we talked a little bit about the professors at Columbia. One of the professors at Columbia is Joseph Massad. After the seventh attack inflicted by Hamas terrorists on innocent Jewish civilians and kids at a music festival, which we've all read about, a horrible, disgusting event by Hamas, Mr. Joseph Massad, a professor of modern Arab politics and history at Columbia, said the attack was awesome and, quote, a stunning victory of the Palestinian resistance.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so rape, murder,
cutting off heads,
kidnapping, decapitation, sexual mutilation, these are, in this professor's view, a stunning victory for the Palestinian resistance.
You could just bring you to tears. It really can, what is going on. It just amazes me. But one thing, Rob, that they never want to look at when you say, well, oh, they're innocent Palestinians are getting killed. They're getting killed because of Hamas. They hide behind their people. They
exactly.
go into the hospitals and schools. So
here's another professor, Hamid Dabashi, professor of Iranian studies and comparative literature at Columbia. He said Israel is responsible, quote, for every dirty problem in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every dirty, treacherous, ugly, and pernicious happening in the world, just wait for a few days and the ugly name of Israel will pop up in the atrocities. He put it on Facebook, okay?
Yeah.
He referred to Jews as hyenas, which resulted in a pro-Israel student group asking for the professor to be rebuked. Well, of course, he was not. Here's another professor, and there's a whole list of them. I'll just do this guy here. Mohammed Abdu was brought as a visiting scholar to teach a class on, quote, decolonial queerness and abolition. He's described as a, quote, North African Egyptian Muslim anarchist, interdisciplinary activist scholar of indigenous black critical race and Islamic studies, as well as gender, sexuality, abolition, and decolonization. When asked his position on October 7th, he declared on social media, quote, yes, I am with Hamas and Hezbollah and Islamic Jihad, unquote. These are professors at Columbia.
These are college. I'd be afraid to send my kid to college. I got to tell you,
I'm with you, Stu. I've got two kids, and they both went to college. And not only would I not pay $70,000 to send my children to Columbia. I wouldn't send them there if Columbia paid me $70,000.
It's not just Columbia. Unfortunately.
Well, but the problem, Stu, is it's not just Columbia. The New York Post, which is, in my opinion, a very good New York newspaper, better than the Daily News. It's got the fourth largest circulation in the nation.
Gives
believe
you
it
balance.
Or not. People don't know that.
Gives you balance, yeah.
But the New York Post calls out the truth. The New York Post called out the Biden laptop before the election, and their stories were spiked.
Yep.
They were labeled Russian disinformation and spiked by the national news media, and it was only after the election was over that it was made clear across the country that the Hunter Biden laptop was legitimately his, and that the things in there were things that he was saying and doing. But the New York Post was the only paper in the country to disclose that before the election, and they were condemned for it. And that,
of course,
to me, was a major failing of the national media not to recognize the fact that the New York Post stories were accurate. And they continue to be incredibly accurate in describing some of the events that are taking place on campus that, I'm sorry, but, you know, here in Boston, at Harvard, and in Connecticut, at Yale, you're just not getting the full stories because the narrative, the left-wing narrative, does not appeal to the liberals in the media. It's not just liberals at these colleges, it's liberals in the media. The National Public Radio just lost a 25-year veteran of NPR.
And I hope we don't forget that.
He said there's no more balance in NPR, and that's National Public Radio. That is supposed to be government-funded and therefore fair and balanced, and it's not.
Well, we shouldn't be paying our tax dollars to them, and that we could do another whole hour on that. So, Rob, let me ask you this before the break. It appears, besides students that want to think, hey, I'm a demonstrator, and they don't know what they're talking about, and some of them are real evil and all that. Do you think there's a lot of infiltration of anti-Semites who are taking total advantage of this situation that are coming
Absolutely.
In?
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, because, you know, this goes to the root of the question. Have you ever noticed, as you watch on TV or you look at some of the articles in the newspapers, have you ever noticed the signs? Are the signs that they are posting, are they handmade?
It looks like it's been certainly controlled very nicely.
Yeah, they're not handmade. The slogans are the same across the country, and they're professionally produced signs. Who's paying for that? At Columbia, they erected tents in the quadrangle, about 100 tents, and last week the police came in, removed all the tents, and now they're back. The tents are back, not the same ones. A whole batch, 100 new ones. Mm-hmm. But they're all brand new tents, and they're all about the same size and the same color. Who's paying for that? Who's covering the cost of all of this? Where's the money coming from? Is it just the students digging into their lunch money?
No way.
To buy a new tent to go into the quadrangle?
No way.
I mean, these are the questions that have to be asked. This money is dirty money coming in through, as far as I'm concerned, terrorist channels, or maybe from terrorist supporters here in the United States, maybe from folks like George Soros and others who are essentially looking for a one-world economy, and to have a one-world economy, you got to destroy the United States. I mean, Israel is small potatoes compared to what they really plan to do.
No, they're licking their chops.
Where's the money coming from? Who's
paying
for it?
Licking their chops. What's going on here? It's heartbreaking. It's truly heartbreaking. I got to take a little break, and I want to pursue this a little more and some other things. Stay with us, Rob.
Absolutely.
89-5252. Maybe we can get a call or two in, but I want to cover this situation with the colleges, give people a real idea what's going on. Rob Simmons is with us. I know when my granddaughters got out of college, they were indoctrinated. They're not anti-Semitic, but they were indoctrinated in a lot of the opinions, and like, wow, where did all this come from? And you could see it. And there's no gray area. I mean, sooner or later, they'll catch on. I mean, they're very bright. But it's things like that, Rob, that are very disconcerting. So Where do we go from here?
Well, I'm referring again to the New York Post. Monday of this week, a rabbi at Columbia warned Jewish students to stay home amid the extreme anti-Semitism on campus. This is a rabbi who is a prominent rabbi at Columbia University. So he is affiliated with Columbia University. He's told the students to go home. Last Friday, the police were brought in to break up the encampment, and it looked like President Minouche Shafik of Colombia was going to shut some of this down. But now Colombia, according to yesterday's New York Post, Colombia surrenders. Anti-Israel students get a slap on the wrist as professors join the protest, and the school cancels all in-person classes for the semester. So you spend all this money to send your kid to Columbia, and whether or not your kid is Jewish doesn't really matter, because all in-classroom teaching has now been suspended for the semester. The president of Columbia tried to shut it down last week and now has conceded to the radicals and to the terrorists. And this is something that people have to understand, that terrorism is a tactic. Terrorism is something that you use to promote your point of view and to change people's behavior. And it has been defined, terrorism has been defined as an effort to change government policy through the use of force or the threat of force. And in 2001, after 9/11, George Bush issued Executive Order 13224 as a tool to impede terrorist funding and to lead the international effort to bring a halt to terrorist activity. And this executive order listed terrorist organizations, which include Hamas and Hezbollah.
Mm-hmm.
And what it essentially said is that if you're a terrorist organization, the U.S. government will block the assets of individuals and entities that provide support, services, or assistance to or otherwise associate with terrorists and terrorist organizations designated in this executive order.
Sounds good to me. How long did that last?
Out there screaming and yelling that we are Hamas. That's what they're saying. We're Hamas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're wearing the headscarves. They're chanting the slogans. They're carrying the signs. They essentially are engaging in terrorist activity. They are providing support and assistance to and association with terrorists and terrorist groups, Hamas principally in this case, but also Hezbollah and the Houthis.
I got to tell you this. I heard
it. Under this criteria, the government has the power to intercede.
Yeah, right.
To intercede, because it's clear that they are engaged in dangerous activity affecting property and infrastructure, and they're trying to intimidate or coerce a civilian population to influence the policy of government by intimidation and coercion, et cetera, et cetera.
I heard a great interview.
It's the definition of terrorism, the government has, the federal government has the power and the authority to intervene. And you'll recall that when Iran was shipping oil out under President Donald Trump, assets were frozen. Billions of dollars of assets were frozen. Those assets were then released by Joe Biden. $6 billion to get 5 hostages released, and another $10 billion more recently. Those frozen assets should not have been released to Iran. And those frozen assets are floating around the world. Well, the U.S. government has the power and authority through the State Department and the Treasury Department to freeze the assets of others who are engaged in the financial support of these organizations that are terrorizing are academic institutions.
Well, that makes too much sense.
It does make sense. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, President Biden is president of the United States. He's allowing this to happen.
Yep.
He's not only allowing it to happen, he's released frozen assets back to Iran, which is the head of the snake. Anybody who doesn't know that Iran is the head of the snake.
Yeah, they're supplying all the...
I've watched it since
of course.
The Carter administration when the Ayatollah came back, and then they seized our embassy for a year.
I got to tell you...
It wasn't until Ronald Reagan was elected that the hostages were released, and the U.S. government began pursuing a sensible policy.
So, Rob, I got to tell you about this interview.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard her. She's an Iranian woman who now lives in this country, who has a lot of bravery in her. She's been doing the talk show circuit, and she made some points. She's pro-Israel. Yes, she is pro-Israel because she's lived under the rule of Iran. And she said, how come these demonstrators weren't out there when that poor girl, because she didn't wear her burqa, was slaughtered? Where were they when the demonstrators wanted a little more freedom in there and they were slaughtered? Where are the demonstrators? Because they're clueless. They don't know what's going on.
You're absolutely correct. And she was featured in an article in the New York Post on April 16th, where she says she calls out the protesters praising women-hating Ayatollahs and radical Islamists and say, "You don't speak for us."
Yeah.
The anti-Israel idiots block traffic nationwide, and her name is Alicia LeBon. Lashed out at protesters defending Iran and its proxies like Hamas, saying they don't understand how these radical theocracies punish their own people. As you say, a woman who wore her hijab improperly was arrested and tortured and then died in jail. And then Iranian men who were protesting her death were arrested and hung from cranes, construction cranes. They were hung until they died, and they were left hanging from these construction cranes. This is Iran. This is what the Ayatollahs are producing in their own country, and this is what they're exporting through Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis into the Middle East, and now they're exporting it right here into the United States of America. It's a fact. And people better wake up to these facts. This is a serious, serious situation. And with an open border, wide open border, with people not just from Mexico, but from over 150 countries around the world, to include China, Iran, Russia, Cuba, and other countries that hate the United States and or entities that are on the terrorist watch list, we're in serious trouble.
Oh, quit picking on Joe Biden.
He's the president of the United States.
Oh, okay.
if it was Trump,
oh my
or
God.
If it was Carter, or if it was any other Bush or any other president doing the same thing, I'd say the same
thing. So would I. Well, I'm going to take a quick question, and then this hour, as always, goes too fast when I have you on. Hi, WICH. What's your question?
Yes, Heidi.
Go ahead.
No, but you're taking a quick break.
No, I'm taking a quick question.
Good morning, Colonel.
Hey, good morning.
What I think they should do with all these protesters who don't know what they're doing is when they're arrested, make a law that their arrest records cannot be mutated from their arrest records, and it will follow them for the rest of their life. That way, when they wake up 10 years from now and they try to get good jobs... And they get turned down, then they can see what's going to happen. What they did was wrong.
All right.
Your comments, and I'll hang up.
I would vote for that, but
I like what the gentleman said. It's unfortunately everyone who was arrested last week at Columbia was let go.
Yeah, and they were laughing when they were let go.
And one of the chants, as you may recall from watching the TV, was NYPD KKK.
Yep.
And there was an image of a woman beating a tin cup on a police barrier, shouting with a hijab, with her face, not a hijab, but with a scarf, a Palestinian scarf covering her face, so it's hard to see who she was. She's beating a tin cup on the police barrier and saying, NYPD KKK.
Yeah.
And the police officer that she was screaming at was an African-American. calling
senseless,
the police KKK.
They don't know what they're doing.
Even if they're black.
Yeah.
And you know, they get arrested, and they put them in a bus. They take them down to the jail to book them. In 24 hours, they're out, or even less.
And criminals get arrested now, and they let them out, and the next thing, every day I read that they killed somebody.
Well, they kill somebody. They push somebody into a moving subway car. Now the big deal is you see a woman walking down the street, and you don't like the way she looks, you punch her in the face. I mean, New York is... New York is worse than a third world country.
Well,
right now.
These are the monsters.
There's no law and order.
These are the monsters that people keep electing, and the voters need to wake up. I'm going to take a little break, Rob. We have some time, and
you got it.
I'm going to get in as much as I can. I do appreciate your time. We'll be right back.
I'll hold on.
Rob Simmons is with us for another 20 minutes. I like to keep him all day, but I can't do that because Rob is a busy man. So, Rob, if I was president of the United States and this was going on, I would have, at 8 o'clock in the evening, prime time, I would address the American people. And I would talk about what's going on in these colleges.
Yep.
And I would emphatically tell people what is really going on and talk about the anti-Semitism and how this all started and... there's no way that he's going to touch that, of course, but that's what I would do. Such an important thing that's happening all over the country.
Well, you see, what you're calling for, Stu, is what I've been calling for a while, is leadership. Leadership. You're calling for leadership, and President Joe Biden has not provided it and cannot provide it. You recall when he was running for president... he cut a deal with Bernie Sanders to essentially adopt Bernie Sanders' position on a whole series of issues if he was to be elected president. And so Bernie Sanders supported Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders' biggest advocate in the U.S. House is AOC, a member of the squad.
Mm-hmm.
So he is responding to members of the squad, and he's caught between trying to be ironclad in his support for Israel and at the same time accommodating the Hamas-supporting left wing of the Democrat Party.
It's an election year. It's an election year, and he wants to just get
He's electioneering. Yeah. You can't do it. And when you look at some of the primary votes for the uncommitted in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Michigan... The uncommitted votes are substantial numbers of people who normally would vote to support Joe Biden in the primary, and they're saying they're uncommitted. And this is on the Democrat side. So Joe Biden is a career politician. I served on the Senate Intelligence Committee for 4 years where he was a member. And basically, he would read the Washington Post and the New York Times in the morning, and whatever they were saying... that became his position for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, if that position changed, he would change. That's what politicians do, and that's what senators do. They talk. They're not executives. They're not chief executives. They're not governors. They're not mayors. They're not military officers like Dwight David Eisenhower or Ulysses S. Grant. They're not people that are accustomed to making hard decisions and hard choices. They're people that are accustomed to talking. And now, even Joe Biden, who used to be a great talker, he could not keep his mouth shut. He was known for talking, you know, vociferously on every topic and every subject.
They don't want him to talk now.
Now he can hardly put two sentences together.
See, but a lot of politicians, but particularly him, I'd like to know how he really feels, as opposed to... if I say this, I'll get this voting group, and then I'll get that voting group, and how can you know? It's
not going to happen, yeah. Stu. Not in the cards. He has been a senator since he was in his 20s. It's the only job he's ever had. And when they talk about his some of the things he says that aren't exactly true, well, You see, if you're a senator, it doesn't really matter. You can say, well, yeah, I was in South Africa talking to Nelson Mandela when he was in jail, and it doesn't really matter. There are no consequences for saying that if you're a senator. You can say, I'm the first member of my family to go to college. Well, he's not. His father and his grandfather went to college, so he's not, so that's a lie. He could say that I finished in the top of my class. He did not. He was actually thrown out for plagiarism and begged to get back into law school. And the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
One tall tale after another, after another, after another. And when you're a senator, it doesn't really matter, because as long as the people indulge you and reelect you from a little tiny state like Delaware, you can hardly find it on the map. Most people don't even know where it is. But you're a senator, so you can get away with that.
I'm going to get one more call in.
Senators don't make good presidents.
I'm going to get one more call in here. Hi, WICH. What's your question for Rob?
Hi, Rob. Great to hear your voice. Hope you're doing well.
What's your question,
hey,
sir?
I'm doing as good as you can at my age.
Oh, that's fine by me. I love hearing your voice. I love hearing your thoughts. And, again, thank you so much for all the service, public service you have given
Well, you're
out.
Very kind. I thank you very much. And I thank Stu for giving me a chance to let off a little steam and talk about what's bothering me about what's going on in our country here.
Well, let me ask you something. If I'm not mistaken, back when you were going back and forth to Washington, didn't you sit on a transportation committee?
I sure did.
You're darn tootin'. Well, I want to ask you some transportation questions.
Okay, ask one question.
Okay, one question, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
What is the matter with the transportation systems in our country today? There's a lot of things going on, derailing, and I cringe when I hear the news.
All right. Thank you, sir. Good question. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, in my opinion, there are certain fundamental issues that government has to address. Certain fundamental issues that government has to address. Government has to protect us, provide public safety at home, and national security in dealing with countries abroad, okay? Because no single individual, no town, no state can defend against, you know, a foreign enemy, and no individual at home can defend against a criminal enterprise. So public safety is a fundamental responsibility. A second fundamental responsibility is transportation. You used to have private roads or turnpikes in America. You don't have those anymore. The federal government, the state government, the municipality takes care of the roads. So, long story short, where's the money for transportation? Where's the real high-speed train? Where's the real highway, interstate highway between Boston and New York? It's not I-95. I-95 is basically Route 1A. And the answer is no money. So where's the money going? Well, the money is going to social programs. How many immigrants are coming into the United States and not being taken care of? No, they go into hotels. They go to hospitals. They go into schools. They are bleeding off billions and billions of dollars. They're here illegally, and yet the government is providing them with incredible support that goes into the billions and billions of dollars, and as a consequence, projects like road projects are neglected. They're neglected, and that's a damn shame, because the transportation system in this country after World War II with Dwight Eisenhower was the envy of the world. The envy of the world, because he's a military guy and he understood that our economy and our society needed a good transportation system. So we have the interstate system, which he pushed as president of the United States. That system is now outdated. It's outdated, and it needs to be upgraded and replaced, and that's simply not happening.
We definitely want to get this in this hour. I mean, I personally think that the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is an okay guy. I don't know him that well. I know he was just at... was it Columbia? But what do you think of the decision to give X amount of dollars to the Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan? What was your take on that?
I support that, and I think that you cannot hold the government hostage over one issue. I'm all for securing the border.
Mm-hmm.
When I served in Congress, I said, look, the first thing we have to do before we address the issue of illegals who are in this country looking for a change of status, we have to secure the border. And the border is not secure. It was relatively secure under Bush. Unfortunately, under Obama and now Biden, it is not secure. Trump tried to secure it, but could not get funding for the wall, which is absolutely necessary. So I am all for securing the border, and I think having an open border, which we now have, is not only a sign of weakness. It allows people into this country that under normal circumstances we would not allow in this country. But I think Johnson made a critical choice with regard to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. We have to live up to our commitments to people fighting for their freedom elsewhere in the world. I lived in Taiwan for 3 years. Taiwan is known as Free China. It's relatively free. The communists want to take that freedom away. We have some responsibility as the leader of the free world to assist them. In Ukraine, American boys aren't dying. It's Ukrainian boys and girls and civilians that are dying. All they're asking for is weapons for ammunition,
yeah,
and rockets and missiles and drones so that they can fight back. They're desperate. They need that support. And the same is true of Israel. When Iran attacked Israel with over 300 cruise missiles, drones, et cetera, the U.S. did assist, and the U.K. did assist Israel in creating, if you will, an Iron Dome to shoot down 99% of those missiles. Can you imagine what would happen if we didn't provide that defense?
Yep.
It would have been devastating for that country. The country of Israel is the size of New Jersey. It's tiny. It's a tiny little country, and it's got the West Bank, which is run by the Palestinian Authority, which of course the leader says there was no Holocaust, and Gaza, which is run by Hamas, which just engaged in the worst attack against Jewish civilians since the Holocaust. So, you know, they're in a critical situation. They need our support. And Mike Johnson put his speakership on the line when Marjorie Taylor Greene threatened to initiate a removal. He said, you do what you have to do. I'm going to do the right thing.
Yeah, I appreciated that with him. Yeah,
I did, too. I thought he spoke as a true Speaker of the House and as a true Republican leader. Because, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate, the Congress, it's like the Connecticut General Assembly. It's a huge committee. What one person doesn't run the show. Nancy Pelosi came close to running the whole show as Speaker of the House, but the Republicans don't do it that way. And the Republicans do accommodate regular order when at all possible, and Republicans do make deals with Democrats if it's for the good of the country. Isn't that...
That's what I want. That's all I always want.
Isn't that what it's all about?
Yeah, bipartisan.
I mean, are you going to tell me that when I was head of the Long Island Sound Caucus, I didn't work with Democrats? Well, not every member of Congress in Connecticut and New York who are part of the caucus, they weren't all Republicans. Half of them were Democrats. You have to work with Democrats to get anything done. Oh, but, you know, then they label me, oh, he's a rhino. He's no good. He works with Democrats. Well, you know, that's how stupid it's gotten, that Republicans don't work with Democrats.
You're supposed to work for the American people.
I work with Jim Landrieu from Rhode Island, whose district included Quonset Point, and we worked together for 4 years supporting Electric Boat and the submarine base because it was in the best interest of our district and our state and the country. So, of course, we worked together on it. Isn't that what we want these people to do? Work together for the country, not just for your individual ideology.
Well, that's why I have you on the show, because I don't understand. It should be what's best for America, what's best for our country, what's best for the people that you represent. And certainly there'll be disagreements, but when it's for the benefit, don't hold back if it's something good. And you said it right
there.
Well,
you're absolutely right, Stu. And I have in my hand, I have a small editorial from the Wall Street Journal, April 19th. It's titled, Mike Johnson Makes His Case on Ukraine. Then the subtitle, The Speaker Puts His Job on the Line in a Welcome Show of Leadership.
Yeah.
Leadership. Mr. Johnson's behavior is called leadership. Well, we need that leadership generally speaking, throughout the administration in Washington, D.C. We need that leadership with our governors across the country. We need that leadership in our academic institutions. You can't just sit there like a deer in the headlights and say, well, I don't know, I think that it may be anti-Semitic, and the Jews may be threatening the Jews, but, well, you know, free speech.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
Free speech. Yeah. Hate speech is not free speech. The First Amendment does not protect hate speech or libelous speech or speech that can give rise to illegal acts. That's not what the First Amendment's all about.
Jewish people are afraid to go to class.
Afraid to go to class.
Yeah.
And their leaders, who are rabbis, are saying, don't go to class.
Yeah.
It's not safe.
So let me, I wanted to get this in today, too, is that, you know, the election is in November. It'll be here in a minute. As we get older, time flies. You know that. Can we trust the system? I mean, a lot of people I know, people that say, gee, you know, I'm going to vote, but I'm uncomfortable. I think there's shenanigans going on, and how can we protect our voting rights? And you hear the Republicans say we should be doing that, and the Democrats don't want to do that. And are you comfortable with our election system now?
No, but I never have been.
Okay.
You know, remember Lyndon Johnson? He used to boast that he got more votes from some of those rural Texas towns.
Mm-hmm.
He got more votes than they had people.
That's not a good sign. Yes.
Remember Mayor Daley in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
He would deliver the vote. Tammany Hall in New York, they would deliver the vote. Issues with regard to to voting have always been there. In the races that I ran for Congress, there were always questionable issues. When Eddie Munster lost by two votes to Sam Gageson, and then he found some irregularities that involved people in prison voting, but then the Democrats found some additional votes that hadn't been counted, and then he found other irregularities at UConn, and then the Democrats found some other votes that the absentee ballots that hadn't. It's always been the case.
Let me ask you this.
The fact is, you have no alternative. You got to vote.
I get it. All right. Let's just look at paper ballots now. It seems like one side obviously wants more paper ballots than the other side. Does that make it much easier?
Secretary of State Baker and Jimmy Carter served on a commission looking into the issue of voter fraud. And their commission reported that the greatest amount of voter fraud in America, and this was like 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
was in absentee ballots. So that was a bipartisan commission.
Yep.
Baker was worked for, I think, George Herbert Walker Bush. Carter, of course, was president. It was a bipartisan commission that came out, and I forget the exact date that they came out, but it was more than 20 years ago. It's closer to 30 years ago, and they concluded that the absentee ballots was the greatest source of illegal ballots in the system. Well, during COVID, absentee ballots were everywhere.
Yeah, if you had a nose, you could use one. Yeah,
they were being sent out. I had somebody that called me and say, I got an absentee ballot that my neighbor sent me from Seattle, Washington. I used to live in Seattle. Now I live in Texas, but my neighbor saw the ballot in the mailbox in the mailroom for the apartment building and knew my address in Texas and sent it to me in Texas. He said I could have filled it out and sent it in. Nobody knows, nobody cares. The 2020 election had higher numbers for both Republicans and Democrats than any previous race, as we all know. That's why there was so much controversy over it. But a lot of that was due to just everywhere you looked, there were ballots. Paper ballots are the greatest source of corruption in the system, and having unsecured so-called lock boxes outside City Hall. Look what they do in, look what they do down in Bridgeport.
So we got
photographs of this woman.
She wasn't even punished for that.
Who was a Democrat who is stuffing the ballot box for the mayor. And well, lo and behold, he eventually got reelected, even though he spent 7 years in jail. Nobody seemed to care.
She's not in
Bridgeport,
jail.
He got elected, even though there were photographs of stuffing the ballots during the primary.
You can blame the voters.
And Mayor Ganim is now the mayor of Bridgeport.
Yeah,
the woman still works for him in the city hall.
That's pathetic.
This is right here in Connecticut, folks.
I know. As soon as they can come up with somebody who. Found cheating, can you get an automatic 5 years in jail? Maybe that'll stop, but it's unlikely. And with COVID kind of at bay for now, they still want all those paper ballots again.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been a moderator here for 15 years in Stonington, and I will tell you that when everybody comes into the voting place in Stonington, you have to show your photo identification.
Ooh.
And you have to give your address, and we cross the address off. Yeah, photo identification. Why is it that there are counties and states around the country where photo ID is considered racist?
Because we know why.
Racist.
We know why. It's the race card.
How many ethnic minorities don't have a driver's license? My God, here in the state of Connecticut, the governor issues driving licenses to illegal aliens.
Of course.
And it used to say for driving purposes only. Now that's been taken off. So illegal aliens driving a car, all they have to do is show their license in a voting place.
Don't get me started. You're going to get me started,
there
Rob.
There are states around the country and counties where you can drive to town hall to cast your vote,
but you don't
have to show your license.
Rob, I got to go, but after this interview, I'm going to bang my head on the wall, because you're absolutely right, and I wish I could keep you on for 6 hours, but I'll let you go. It's a beautiful day.
Well, thank you very much, Stu. All the best to you and to your wonderful listeners.
God bless. Thank you.